We're doing the Yaakov on Tractate Berachot, and Baruch Hashem, we have some new faces here, so we'll reintroduce. This is a work that was written about 600 years ago, and it distills the Talmud for the stories, for the allegories, for all the Agadic works in the Talmud. And the Agadic works really are works within the Talmud that have tremendous depth. And what we're doing is we're getting a cursory glance just to know a little bit what it says. We're not going into too much depth. We're holding page Ayin Hay, and you could catch all the classes you missed. All the newcomers can catch all the previous classes online. Some of them are on mechonmeir.org, and the rest of them are on torahforme.org. The Omar Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia, we're by the letter Kuf Ches. The Omar Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia Amarav. We have it page Ayin Hay in the standard editions, which is Daf Mem Gimel Amud Beis in the Gemara. Ve'amar Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia Amar Rav. Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia quoted in the name of Rav. Atidin kol bechurei Yisrael shelo ta'amu ta'am chet. In the future, all the youngsters of Israel who never tasted sin, in the future, she'itnu reach kalevanon. They will give off a smell like Lebanon. They'll give off a beautiful smell. Shneimar, the verse says, yelchu yonkotav v'yichazai todo v'reach lo kalevanon. His roots will spread, he'll have glory like an olive tree, and he'll have smell like Lebanon. So, they're going to have this great level that they'll even smell good. From a distance, you'll be able to tell, look what fine people they are. Amar Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia Amar Rav. Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia said in the name of Rav, Mai Dichtiv, what does the verse mean in Ecclesiastes? Et hakol asa yafe biito. God made everything nice in its set time. Melamed, this teaches us, shekol echad ve'echad yipalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu umanuto befanav. God made everyone's trade find favor in their eyes. You see people, you see the blacksmith, he'll tell you how great it is to be a blacksmith. You see the dentist, will tell you how great it is to be a dentist. They might not tell it to you because they don't want competition. The Gemara says, we have a tradition that everyone hates competition. So everyone in a trade is going to tell you how lousy their trade is. But ask their wives. Ask other people who know them, and most often, people can have all kinds of trades and be happy with them. I often tell the story about the guy who cleans toilets, Amir Kazarav, and does it with his bare hands, and then lifts his hands and says, how holy is the work I do? Look at how lucky I am. You ask yourself, how could you be happy doing work like that? He's happy. In a natural state of things, a person should be happy with his trade. He should think that his trade is something nice. Sometimes a person is dealing with a trade that stinks. Ask a garbage man. And many garbage men will tell you what's good about being a garbage man. They're dealing with a job where they're in the sun all day, and they don't have such nice smells around them all day. Yeah, but they'll explain to you that at least they're working out, and they have a good pension plan, and they have their evenings off to be with the family, and they'll explain to you the benefits of the job they have. So the Pasuk is telling us that God made something special in the world. We all know that there is a need for different jobs to be filled. And Hashem made it so that when people fill certain jobs, they're going to be happy with it. I once had a friend who, he told me his goal in life is to carry boxes. So initially I thought he was joking. He said to me, I love it. You take a whole stack of boxes, you could work for 6 hours, and you move stacks of boxes from this side of the room to that side of the room, and you look back and you see a clear room. Look at what you did. So I looked at him, and I was waiting for the punchline. And then I realized he was serious. This is what he wants to do with life. You know, we both volunteered in an organization together, and this is what he wanted. I asked him, that's what you want to do in life? He said to me, you give me a room full of boxes, tell me what to do, and I'm the happiest man on earth. Okay, I don't understand it, but the Gemara says Hashem made it so that if this is the job that he could do, he wasn't capable of doing that much more than that. I tried to get him literate, and his parents disapproved, and they banished our relationship with that. At the end of the day, he was happy. The guy was happy. You know, this is what he wanted. So Shlomo HaMelech says it's a gift. You know, you need people who are going to move boxes. You need people who are going to do every type of job. And Hashem made it that these people are also happy in what they do. Now, we have to remember there's another Gemara that says that God weeps every day over certain things. One of the things God weeps over is the misplaced people. Meaning sometimes people are doing a job that's not the job they're supposed to be doing. And that's the worst thing. And the Talmud tells us that every day that in heaven they shed a tear over the people that are in the wrong place. Now obviously those people are not going to be happy with what they're doing. They're not in the right place. But when a person finds the right job, then Hashem made a gift. Hashem made it so that people can be happy with every type of job, provided that's the job that fits them. Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa taught. Gentlemen, you remember who was Rav Papa? He was a disciple of Rava, right? Rav Papa was a disciple of Rava. So Rav Papa taught, Hainu Damu Inchi. He said, that's what people say. Tali Le Kora Le Devar Acher Ve'ihu Didei Avid. If you try to give a pig, you try to hang around his neck a special basket so he should eat clean food, and he's going to wallow around in the mud and will get his food muddy anyways. Because that's what he's used to doing and that's what he's happy doing. Don't try to change his nature. And so too, you have to know, people sometimes are happy with what they're doing, and if you're going to try to change it, you're not helping them. They're going to just go back to their old ways. We had a guy who, this is an extreme example, he liked to walk the streets with his carriage and collect charity. That's what he liked to do. He'd have a Walkman, listen to music, collect charity. So his sister took him to a psychologist, got him on medication, got him into a home, got him all set up, got him with a haircut, got him on a diet, and the guy looked like a regular, like everyone else. And she took him down to Florida, and every 2-3 years, he'd run away from his sister, come back to the yeshiva in New York, stop taking his medication, start walking around with his Walkman collecting charity. You know, there's a saying that says, you can take the monkey out of the jungle, you can't take the jungle out of the monkey. So his sister did everything to make it good for him. You know, she got him entertainment, she got him good food, she got him everything good. But deep down inside, that's not what he wanted in life. So as much as she'd medicate him and get him to do everything else, well, the second he could, he'd run back, get on a Greyhound bus and collect his fare all the way back to New York and start walking around New York through the subway system. And that was the life he wanted. So that's an extreme example. But at the end of the day, Hashem made it so that we each have a certain niche. And the truth is that Freud was onto this point too. Freud said there are two decisions that come from the innermost being of a human being, from the innermost psyche, and you cannot necessarily define them, and the person himself might not be able to explain those decisions. And they are the decision who a person marries and the decision what job a person takes. Those are two decisions that come from deep down inside, and it's very hard to be able to figure out who you marry and what job you take. What job? It stems...
You mean career?
Career. The career you choose, yeah. The direction, the career path a person takes. So we're taught over here that there is a tendency within a human being for a specific career, and Hashem made it so that if he hits on that career, he's going to be happy. And the fact that you or I wouldn't be happy in that career, well, that's because it doesn't fit us. But if it fits him, so Hashem made it so that people can be very, very happy in every career.
ואמר רב זוטר בר טוביה אמר רב, ואמר לה אמר רב חנן בר ביזנה, אמר רב שמעון חסידה, ואמר לה אמר רב יוחנן משום רשבי. Different quotes, who's the one quoting this? The quote is as follows. נוח לו לאדם, it is more convenient for a person, שיפיל עצמו לתוך כבשן האש, that he should throw himself into a burning furnace, ועל ילבין פני חברו ברבים, and not shame his friend in public.
Meaning if a person has a choice to jump into a burning furnace and lose his life, God forbid, or embarrass someone else, God forbid, so then he should know that to embarrass someone in public is worse than committing suicide, than jumping into a burning furnace. How do we know this concept? We learn it from Tamar. Sheneemar himutzet, as we find by Tamar. Tamar was being accused that she committed adultery. Tamar knew that really she had a relationship with her father-in-law, and that was permissible, given that her husband had passed away, and now she became pregnant. They didn't know where she became pregnant from. According to the laws they practiced in those days, when a wife passed away and there was still a father-in-law or a brother left alive, she should marry one of the two. She became pregnant from her father-in-law, now that her husband had passed away. By their laws, that was mutav, but no one knew it. And she wasn't about to shame Yehuda and publicize, he's the father. So now they're ready to give her the death penalty, and she sends word to her father-in-law, and she says, here's the sign. You want to know who fathered these children? Here's the sign. She didn't say, you're the father. She didn't tell the people standing around, he's the father. She left it up to Yehuda. Either he's going to say he did it, or else she's going to be executed. Why? Because of this concept, that a person should rather give up their lives than shame someone else. So Tosus automatically says, aren't there only three mitzvos that you're supposed to give up your life for? There are three mitzvot you're obligated to give up your life for, but there are other mitzvot where we're taught this concept, that this is more weighty. And this is an eye-opener for us. You know, when King David would enter the academy, so people there would try to tease him. He was being accused of committing adultery. So they'd ask him, David, tell us, what's the law? What death penalty do you give someone who committed adultery? So King David would answer, he'd say, he who committed adultery gets a death penalty at the hands of the court down below, and has a portion in the world to come. But he who shames his fellow man in public has no portion in the world to come. They were trying to embarrass him publicly. And David HaMelech, it says, he was embarrassed. He turned white when they'd ask him this question. He says, they tear my heart and no blood comes out. I'm so ashamed, all the blood's been drained from me. When a person's shamed, they turn white. First they turn red, and then the blood drains and they turn white. So King David in Tehillim, in Psalms, describes that he was so embarrassed, it's like there was no blood left. Like he says, if you tear my heart, there wouldn't be any blood left to spill out. So here we're taught that if a person has a choice to shame someone else, even in dire circumstances, he should avoid shaming someone publicly. Tamar went to the extent that we're taught to give up one's life rather than shame someone publicly. Yes? What?
You said publicly. Are you stressing that word? Are you saying...
It says publicly. That's what the Talmud says.
So for example, I know this rabbi, he said he went to this synagogue and he was new to it, no one would give him a seat in that synagogue. So is that public or synagogue? Because he was embarrassed.
There's in a synagogue is public, yeah. Yes.
So what did Yohanan do?
What did Yehuda do?
Yeah.
Yehuda said, I'm the one. I fathered the children. He admitted. He saved their life, saved the two kids' life. And thanks to that, we have King David and the Messiah. They came from that. Tanu Abanan. Now we're continuing. We have a Tanoic quote. Tanu Rabbanan is a Tanoic quote that was validated by the academies of Rafi and Rav Oshaya. Sometimes you have Tanoic quotes that were not yet validated, and sometimes the Talmud will tell us that's a misquote. Don't give that too much weight. So Tanu Rabbanan means the rabbis taught, meaning they verified this braisa. This is a Tanoic quote that is not in the Mishnah. Shisha devarim gnai lo letalmid chacham. Six things are an embarrassment for a Talmud chacham. There are six things that a Talmud chacham, a learned person, is not supposed to do. Number one, al yetze kshu mevusam lashuk. He shouldn't walk out to the marketplace with a lot of perfume. Because in those days, only people who were running after other men would be walking around with perfume to attract other men. Today, I don't think that applies to deodorant or things like that, that are there really to cover up a bad smell. That's not what it's talking about. But in their days, walking out with smelling was a sign that he was interested in something else. So that's a shame for Talmud Chacham. He should not be walking around smelling perfume. Number two, Val yetzeh b'minalim hamtulehim. He shouldn't walk out with shoes that are all wormy, meaning his shoes shouldn't look like they're all destroyed. Number three, Val yetzeh yechidi balayla. And the Gemara is going to explain. And he shouldn't walk alone at night. Remember, in their days at night, people were home going to sleep. If you were out in the street at night, chances are you were looking for something that's not so proper. And he shouldn't stand talking idly to a woman in the marketplace. Everyone's looking, he's supposed to be a modest person. What's he doing just talking to women in the marketplace? And he shouldn't enter last into the academy. You know, people see you walking around with your tefillin in the street at 9:30. They don't know that you were up all night at the kotel learning and you just got a two-hour nap. As far as they're concerned, look at the bums, the yeshiva guys. They get up late. They don't take their job seriously. So you represent something. So even if a guy has all the excuses in the world, he should not enter the academy late. ואל יסב בחבורה של עמי הארץ. And he shouldn't be a part of a group that's uncivilized. You know, even if they're sitting and they're having a meal and they invite him and then they're all going to crack these vulgar jokes, you know, he shouldn't be a part of a group that's beneath his dignity, even if they invite him to the meal. ויש אומרים, אף על יפסיע פסיעה גסה. And some say, he also shouldn't be seen running in the streets. If he's a rabbi, he's a learned person, he should walk in a respectable way. ואל ילך בקומה זקופה. And he should not walk in a haughty, straight manner. His gait should also be reflective of his modesty. So now that we quoted this braisa, now the Gemara is going to expand on each one. Al yitzek shum vusam nashuk. He should not walk out when he's all covered with perfume. What's the reasoning behind it? Amar Rav Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan. Rav Chiya bar Abba quoted in the name of Rav Yochanan. B'makom shchashudin al mishkav zachu. We're talking about places where there are a lot of men running around after other men. So the norm in those places is that if a person's going out with perfume, that's indicative. It's a sign. Today there are also signs like that. There are different codes which can indicate that a person is looking for other men. So whatever those codes are in whatever society, a person has to ensure he shouldn't have those codes. There was a time that a man's wearing an earring and one ear meant that and another ear didn't mean that. When I was still a kid, there was still that was a code. There was a time when wearing a certain t-shirt with certain words on it meant a code that a person was looking for other men. Every society in every day and age has their code for what it is. In Chazal's time, in certain locations, walking out with perfume was indicative of that. So the Gemara says that that's what that price meant. Amar Rav Sheshet lo amran ela bevigdo, aval bigufo zeh me'avale. Rav Sheshet said, it's only if he's wearing perfume on his clothing. But if he's wearing perfume on his body, everyone knows he's just wearing it to cover up his sweat, to cover up a bad smell. Amar Papa b'saro kebigdo dami v'amala kegufo dami. There's an argument with whether wearing perfume on one's hair was considered like wearing it on the body to cover up sweat, or like wearing it on the clothes. Okay, so again, this goes to their social norm. V'al yetzeb minarim amtulein. Person should not walk out with wormy shoes. Eini v'avcheh baraba nafik. Wait a second, the great rabbi Rav Chiya bar Abba went out with shoes that were all worn, that were all wormy. It depends. If it's so wormy that people see it, that's the problem. It's only in ways that people will notice it. In the summer, because in the winter it's all covered with mud anyways, no one can see what type of shoes you're wearing. It's only when you're outside, but in the house, if you want to wear worn out slippers or something, that's no one else's business. It's only talking about in a way that it's completely worn out, that people see it, and that it's on the side where people see it, but not at the sole. If the bottom of the shoe is worn out and no one knows, that's okay. Val yetzei chidi balayla, you shouldn't walk out alone at night. Why so? Mishum chashda. People are going to think he has a woman of ill repute waiting for him. What's he doing walking out around at night? So in their days, again, in our days, nighttime, people are walking around. There's a norm. That's only if he doesn't have a set time that he goes to learn. But let's say he comes to a set shir at a set time. Everyone knows every night at this time he goes. So then, if he has a set time that he goes, then everyone knows that's where he's going. So I never understood this Gemara until this past Friday. I never understood it. I always figured, who knows when a person has a set time and when they don't have a set time? Do people really notice? In the last month, so there's an organization here in the community that helps a lot of families in need. So they asked every building to have a representative to collect for that building. So I didn't feel comfortable collecting in my own building. I said, I'll collect a few buildings onward. I didn't want to put my neighbors on the spot. I preferred collecting where I thought no one knew me. So I said, you know what? If you want me to collect, I'll collect a few buildings up the block. So I come this past Friday and I knock on the door and I tell the people, hi, I'm your neighbor. I live a few buildings down. And we're starting this new thing that people are asked to help because, this is an organization that funds. You don't know which of your neighbors don't have food for their kids and which of your neighbors don't have heating in the winter and stuff like that. This is an organization that really helps people in the community. And apartment by apartment, I'd knock and the people would say, I know who you are. I was like, how do you know who I am? And they'd say, well, I know. At this hour, you're going to take your kid to Ghana. And this hour, so you see, the neighbors see. I was shocked. Like, I didn't know my neighbors. I don't know them. But they all knew me. You know, if you have a set schedule and people see you at a set time doing this and that and the other thing. So I'm going up the block and my neighbors know my schedule more or less. Each door I start introducing myself, and they all say, "I know you are." So that's what this Gemara is saying. That if you have a set time, even if it's at 3 in the morning, that you go to your chavrusa, don't worry, your neighbors know you have a set time, 3 in the morning. I once used to have a chavrusa early in the morning, and one time a neighbor of mine said to me, why do you have to get up so early in the morning? So I asked him, does my alarm clock wake you? He said, no, but sometimes I'm up and I hear you go out the door and I look at my clock and I say, oh, there he is again. So you see, people know. It's like, you think, what do your neighbors know? No, that's what the Gemara says. If you have a set time, no one's thinking you're doing something improper. If you're just going out randomly late at night, so then people are going to think things. And here you see, people sometimes say to themselves, you know, why should my neighbor suspect me? I'm a nice guy. Why should he think I'm doing something improper? The Gemara says, don't worry, they'll suspect you. You could rest assured. You could be a nice rabbi, and you could be everything. But if they see you walking out at night, they're going to ask themselves, what are you doing? So again, in today's society, it's a little different. We don't even know when the nighttime comes. Half the time you'll ask a person, when's sunset? People don't know. Because we don't live by day and night. You know, we have streetlights out there, and we work based on a schedule. In certain societies, after 10 o'clock, no one's the stores are closed. Here in Israel, after a certain hour, stores are closed. I don't even know when. If you go to Tel Aviv, there's a nightlife there. It depends on the society a little bit. But anywhere you go, 2 o'clock in the morning, people are going to wonder, what are you doing on the streets? V'alya saper mi shabashuk, you shouldn't be seen standing outside in the marketplace just talking idly to a woman. Amar v'chista afilu yishto. Rav Chista says, even if it's his wife, who knows that it's his wife? People are walking by. A lot of people don't know who your wife is. They're going to see you standing there just schmoozing with a woman. You want to schmooze with your wife? Do it inside. Do it in a modest place. People shouldn't think, oh, the rabbis are out there talking to girls. So a person has to be careful how society views them as well. It's not only about doing what's right. And we bring a quote like this. A person shouldn't be standing outside in the marketplace just talking idly to a woman. Afilu yishto, even if it's his wife. Afilu yibito, even if it's his daughter. Afilu achoto, even if it's his sister. Lefishena kol bekin bikovotav, because not everyone knows it's his relatives. Here we see how careful Chazal wanted us to be. Not to leave room for people to have doubts. Remember, this is what we discussed in the Dove's Minute on Friday. When Moshe Rabbeinu was suspected for stealing a small amount of gold, Moshe panicked. Moshe said, this can't be. We have to do a recounting and verify where that gold went, because I know I didn't pocket a penny. And it was critical to Moshe. And when they finally discovered that they forgot to count the gold hooks, and that's where the missing weight of gold was, so Moshe went into a great song of praise in honor of God. He rattled off 15 terms of praise in 1 second that we say in Yishtabach. Ne'alechon, Shabechon, Ferchon, right? The 15 terms of praise that we say in Yishtabach, Moshe rattled off. He was so excited that now his name has been cleared. And the idea is that when people look at you and you're representing Torah, if there's something that's not exactly right, it reflects on the whole Torah. With Moshe Rabbeinu, all the more so. So Moshe wanted to be extra, extra careful that everything was exactly right. But a person who represents Torah has to know that if people look at you in the marketplace, they know that when they have halachic questions, they call you, their wife calls you, whatever it is. So then if they have a feeling, even slight feeling, oh, he's just talking to women in the street, you're hurting the tadmit, the representation of Torah in the eyes of people. A person has the responsibility when you represent Torah. You have to know that you're representing Torah in the eyes of the masses. And on some level, this applies to all of you. The second you wear a yarmulke and you walk in the streets, to some people, you represent Torah, whether you like it or not. The second you wear tzitzis, they see you're a guy that goes to yeshiva, on some level, you represent it. You can't avoid it. On some level, you're representing the Jewish people, and sometimes you're also representing the Torah. Your family members know you went to yeshiva. We had a guy who came to Mechon Meir once. We don't have time for the story, right? Meir is like right now. And the guy was a good guy, but you know, he came from a very weak background, came to yeshiva, grew a long beard, had his tzitzis out, went and dated a girl, got engaged, and then they were in Shomer Negiah. They were touching one another. So that's prohibited. But, you know, I wouldn't tell him anything because I knew where the guy came from. I knew where he was headed. And you can't judge a person, you know. But his father-in-law calls up the yeshiva and says, what's wrong with you guys? What kind of Torah are you teaching them? The guy comes to me with a beard and his pez is sticking out. And I think I get this from son-in-law. He's not yet married to my daughter. And I see them touching all the time. Is this what your Torah is all about? So how are we going to explain to the guy? Well, we can't start telling him, well, you don't know his history. This is pretty good for him, you know. There's a, you got to take into account where the guy's coming from. That's not what you want to tell the future father-in-law. But at the end of the day, the guy was representing something, whether he liked it or not, and his father-in-law had a very hard time swallowing what he was seeing. So we have to know that whether we like it or not, once we're in yeshiva, to our family members, on some level, we represent Torah. All these halachos are giving us a perspective, a direction we should be thinking in. We have a certain responsibility.